Hey, my name is Chelsea Fagan, and I'm the founder and CEO of The Financial Diet, a totally independently owned and operated company of women who love to talk about money. Welcome to The Financial Confessions, a weekly show where we talk to people about their personal finances, their professional industry, and how money shapes their lives. You can listen to or watch new episodes of The Financial Confessions every week on YouTube or your preferred streaming platform. You can also support TFD and get exclusive access to our entire catalog of ad-free bonus videos, workshops, Discord community, our book club, and more by joining our members-only community on Patreon or YouTube. Our 2024 goal is to be primarily supported by our incredible community, and joining our membership program is the best way to do that. Enjoy the episode. As you might notice, if you're watching this on YouTube, I am very much in that corporate apartment. I'm here for a few of our episodes, although I, as you guys probably know, film 99.9% of the financial confessions in our studio, in our office. But there were a few that I had on the calendar that I absolutely wanted to keep while I was traveling. As a lot of you probably know, our focus this season for the financial confessions is real people. Now, that's not at all to say that the various celebrities and influencers that I've interviewed on this platform in the past, or just people who have a lot of money, are not themselves real. But I really wanted to focus on real issues that are probably more relatable to a majority of people listening than someone who kind of has it all figured out financially. Something you may not know about me, although if you are an OG TFD subscriber slash listener, you definitely do, is that I used to be in credit card debt. Not only was I in credit card debt, I actually went into credit card collections. It ended up really derailing a lot of my financial and personal life, and was just one of the biggest sources of anxiety I've ever experienced. There was basically a period of time where I couldn't even use my cell phone because it was constantly being inundated with collection calls and texts and things like that. I've been lucky enough to be out of credit card debt and out of collections for many years now, although it took me nearly a decade to fully rehab my credit score after all the damage that I'd done to it. But I know that for a lot of you, dealing with credit card debt to some extent, if not debt more generally, like student loans, et cetera, is something that is a big part of your current financial journey. I happen to stumble across the woman that I'm speaking with today via her work as a creator on TikTok in the space of debt and finance and credit cards, and then ended up being tagged in a few of her videos from people saying, oh, you should talk to Chelsea Fagan, which I immediately jumped at the chance to do because I've been watching her stuff organically for quite some time. She speaks really openly about both getting into credit card debt and her current process of getting out of it. She operates at a level of transparency and relatability that I personally deeply admire and also enjoy from, let's be honest, a quasi-voyeuristic perspective, because what is TikTok if not getting to look in people's lives through little windows? But I knew that she would be a perfect person to come on the show and talk about her process of getting into and now out of credit card debt. So without further ado, welcome to my guest today, Brittany Reynolds.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I was so happy that you were getting tagged in my videos. I have been watching your content also for quite some time. So I was like, yeah, this makes sense. I love this.
Thank you for being here. So I wanted to just start off with your story. If you wouldn't mind just taking our listeners through how you got into credit card debt, how much you're in, and where you are now with the payoff process.
Yeah, I got my first credit card right out of college. I just got a Wells Fargo credit card because I was like, whatever, I have my checking in Wells Fargo. Didn't really look much into it. Had the mentality that like, I would never get into credit card debt. I had a friend who had a Nordstrom card who was like constantly in credit card debt. And I was like, oh, that would never be me. And then managed to stay in a pretty low amount of, debt at that point. Cause I only had like a limit of like $3,000 on that card. And then flash forward a couple of years, I opened a Chase credit card for travel points. Cause I was like, I'm going to travel so much. I need this card for points. And they immediately gave me about a $14,000 credit limit. I use that to put all of my big purchases on there. I have an infamous $4,000 couch that I put onto that credit card. Just didn't think much. I don't know. A lot of my mentality towards it was like, I'll get to the debt. Like it's not that big of a deal. I really like minimized my own stress around it when I knew I was so anxious about my credit card debt. Would put Airbnbs on the credit card, all of the things, just because I felt like I just needed and wanted this instant gratification. and found myself in $36,000 of credit card debt, like somewhat 10 years or so later. And recently, back in July, was living with a partner in the Bay Area. All of my cards were really maxed. I needed to end the relationship, but also was like, I don't have any money. Like, I don't have an emergency fund. I'm maxed on my credit cards. We live together. I can't go get an apartment. My credit score wasn't, I mean, my credit score was not good. It was like 603, but it wasn't as like horrible as a lot of people think it's going to be, which I think is interesting. But I was like, I can't get the apartment I would want, if I was moving. So I called my parents up and was like, hey, I need to end this relationship. Would you be okay with me like moving in for a little bit to pay off this credit card debt? And thankfully, I mean, I'm very privileged to have a remote job and also have a remote job that has a really good salary. So I've been able to allocate $4,000 onto my credit card every month. So I really like mapped out that process and was like, okay, like at the latest, I can be debt free by June, July of 2024. So yeah, I made that switch and moved back home with my parents, ended the relationship, kind of did the whole 180. And at 28, that was really scary because I was like, okay, this feels like a failure and this feels like all of my like biggest fears coming true, kind of. But I leaned into that and was like, you know what? Like, we're gonna do a little shift. I like am the desire to be debt-free is more than any of the like fears for me.
Well said. Well, thank you, first of all, for acknowledging upfront the privileges that you bring to the situation, because, you know, I think not enough people do. And especially as it pertains to being able to move back home with your parents, I think a lot of people underestimate or gloss over the extent to which that is not available to everyone and is not something that, you know, it's not a switch that everyone can flip. And you mentioned on top of that, you have, you know, a very good paying job that you can also work remotely. So obviously you're in a good situation to pay down your debt pretty aggressively. But I also imagine that, you know, from a practical perspective, going from overspending to that extent and living independently and having this very different lifestyle to now having this one has got to feel, even as it feels good, there's got to still be a real big delta of dopamine in terms of, you know, the amount of satisfaction you're able to, you know, quick hit satisfaction you can bring into your life. So can you talk a little bit about ways that you've specifically replaced the feeling that that consumption gave you, particularly in the context of like, I mean, one might assume you're probably not buying a bunch of stuff to put in your parents' house.
No. And I think like similarly to the privilege of being able to move home, I think like there was a lot of privilege for me too in being able to go cold turkey, like sort of easily, because I don't have the temptation of friends around me. I don't have like, I don't know. It's just like you said, such a complete shift in my lifestyle. So as far as the like spending goes, I think I kind of flipped my anxiety to like, now it makes me anxious to spend versus like, I like my dopamine comes from paying off the debt. And like, I mean, making videos on TikTok has been really fun as well. But yeah, it's been hard. It's not for everyone. Like both moving home with your parents and going cold turkey on spending is not the like one size fits all answer. I have a really hard time when people are like, this is the way, like people will stitch my videos on TikTok or like, there's been articles written or whatever where people will be like, this is a way to pay off your credit card debt. And I'm like, don't phrase it like that, because like there's so, like I said, so much privilege in every aspect of my situation. It's kind of like a unicorn situation of like things that really like worked out for me. And I'm lucky and happy about that. But yeah, the dopamine is kind of just coming from paying off my debt and my walks. I go on walks.
Love a walk. So, you know, what's interesting about your story to me, and part of the reason why I wanted to speak to you about this subject over other people who might also be in credit card debt, is that you got into credit card debt the quote unquote wrong way. Like, I think there is often, you know, it's a really fine line between not victim blaming people who are in really difficult financial circumstances and have to use credit cards as a resource that they know is not optimal, but they don't have another choice. You know, maybe they get laid off from their job and they still have to make rent and feed their family and do all these things. And a lot of, I think, you know, the conversation around financial health and making better decisions is often very polarized, where on one side you have people who I think like the Dave Ramseys of the world, who come from a place of pretty universal shaming in terms of, you know, if you're in credit card debt, that's sort of an indictment of your character, your intelligence, which is obviously not true for a lot of people. But then on the flip side, I think there can sometimes be a sort of an over permissiveness of like, it's just normal to put things on credit cards. You know, there's a huge amount of content about, you know, sort of making a joke of, you know, buying a new outfit or going on a fancy trip you can't afford or whatever the case might be, where there's really not any kind of critical analysis about like, okay, well, maybe you are in a situation where it's not a survival mode thing, it's an overconsumption thing. And so I specifically really wanted to talk to you because you got into your credit card debt for pretty much exclusively self-imposed consumerist reasons, which I think can often lead to a unique kind of shame when you're trying to be honest about it and get out of it, because people aren't wrong to sort of have negative assumptions about the thinking that got you there in the first place. So can you talk specifically about the experience of being in a tough financial situation, because of your own poor choices?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. And it's been really interesting posting it online and getting the mixed bag of reactions. Because, I mean, I'm the only one to blame for my credit card debt. And it's interesting because, I mean, like you said, a lot of people give themselves permission to overspend and put it on credit cards and whatnot. And that was very much the world that I was living in of like, whatever, like, I am just like a girl. I just like want to spend. And I feel like I'm really trying to like challenge that narrative and flip the switch there of like, no, we understand money. Like girls understand money and understand why things are happening. And yeah, like it was all self-imposed. I way overspent, didn't really think much about my spending at all. But there to me is no reason to sit and like shame myself about it, because it's like, yeah, that happened. Like, okay, let's move forward. Rather than sit and call myself an idiot for it, because like, sure, I can do that all day and sit and be sad, but I have spent enough anxiety about my credit card debt that it's like, I don't know. And now we look at those choices and we make better choices for ourselves financially in the future. And I always like try to emphasize too, the things that I bought, I could have still bought if I had just planned for them. Like, I don't think buying expensive things is wrong or evil or anything. I think like, it's just being able to plan and not put yourself in a bad situation to have a good thing for the like brief amount of time that you have that thing. So I'm not like anti-spending. I'm just now really trying to rework my relationship with spending and my relationship with budgeting. So it's been new, but yeah, there has been quite, a lot of Dave Ramseys in my comments.
Well, and I think also there, I mean, not for everyone, but I think for a lot of people, there's when we're making unhealthy consumer choices and have an unhealthy relationship with shopping, credit cards, et cetera. Usually, I think for most people, there's something underneath that that is worth unpacking. Like if you're just in a desperate financial situation in survival mode, if someone gives you a little bit of money, like things are pretty good. Like you've solved a lot of your problems. Whereas at least for me, when I look back at the really unhealthy spending habits that got me into so much financial trouble in the first place, like a lot of that was more stuff to really unpack in therapy or, you know, in ways that were more kind of mental and emotional. Can you talk a little bit about what you sort of the things about yourself that you learned in reconsidering those choices and in looking back at your spending?
Yeah, I think the past, because I would say the spending really, really got to its worst the past 3 years, maybe. And I was living in the Bay Area, really wanted to move, didn't want to be in the Bay Area anymore. Was kind of just like, I mean, honestly, just pretty depressed and anxious all the time. So my spending was like, this is the one thing I get to have control over. This is the thing that I get to do. Whether that's like spending too much money on wine or going on a trip and buying a really like fancy Airbnb. It's like, okay, I get to give myself this like moment of relief from the general like stresses and anxieties of life. A lot of it was COVID spending. A lot of it was just like, there's everything sucks. Like, I just want to buy things. Like, that was kind of the mentality there of like, this is the only thing I can do right now is like online shop or like buy things. So I think there was definitely a mix of reasons. I've definitely been in a lot of therapy for it. And something one of my therapists would always talk to me about is like, I would be like, well, these things are like making me feel good and making me feel happy and whatnot. And she said one time, it just really stuck with me. She was like, okay, and is a like inflated ego because of these things like a good thing? And I was like, oh, no, like it's not, like it's not a good thing. So yeah, I think I was just unhappy. So for so many different reasons. And now like moving back to Southern California, there's like such a sense of relief in so many ways where I think like living in a circumstance that you don't want to be in can affect so many things. And I feel like a lot of people just kind of like sit in the discomfort of like being in an area they don't want to be in. Again, a huge privilege to be able to move. So I think like really all of it comes down to like the way society is set up for us is like, it's not set up in a way that like sets us up for success or sets us up for something that's even going to like make us feel good. It's like, everything is really hard.
Can you talk a little bit about during the actual process of getting into all this credit card debt, like what you, was there like a mounting existential dread? Did you feel you had a sense as the purchases were accumulating of like, oh, we've crossed a Rubicon, like I'm never paying this off. Like, what was the, like, was it a boiling the frog situation? Like, walk us through the actual experience of going from like $3,000 to $36,000 of credit card debt.
Yeah, it was existential dread every day. Like, I was so stressed out. There was like not a day that would pass that I wasn't thinking about my debt and trying to keep up with like going to dinner with friends and like going on trips or like whatnot. I just never adjusted my lifestyle to accommodate the fact that I was in so much debt. And also on top of that, shoveling $500 a month onto interest. So it's like, I might be putting $1,000 onto my credit card. 500 of that just got tacked on for the interest. So I feel like, yeah, I look through my journal because I am like a big journaler, and the amount of journals of me being sad about money, it makes me so sad looking back at it. I'm like, oh my God, like I have been anxious for years about this. So yeah, it definitely was a daily stress. And I've always been like very open and transparent about my credit card debt with my friends. Like my friends always also have known that I have been in credit card debt. So I think like it was also this like facade that I wanted to put on of like, no, I'm fine with my money though. Like I can still go out to dinner with you guys. Like I can still do this thing, because I didn't want to like deny myself these like experiences when it's like, okay, I should have been having conversations like, oh, can we like have dinner at home? Or like, can we go to a park? And I mean, not to say my friends weren't understanding. They absolutely have been like very understanding about my credit card debt, but I wasn't in the space to really like care like enough to really have those conversations.
Was it something you felt like you could talk to your friends about as it was happening?
In one way, shape or form, yeah. It was more of a joke. Like it was more of like I would pay like poke fun at myself of being in that much credit card debt versus like, no, this is something that's actually like making me feel horrible and like really affecting my life negatively. They knew about it, but it wasn't, I didn't really talk about the like the amount of stress that it was giving me.
And now can you talk about, so you've been at your parents' house for how long?
I've been at my parents' house since August. So like, I'm like, how many months is that? 5 or 6.
So in total, you're looking at about a year with your parents.
About, I mean, thankfully, so the plot is kind of like shifting. So I am now like making money off of TikTok. So the debt payoff is going to be shifting a little bit, which will be exciting.
And you've also moved. I mean, I'm not very good with California geography, but I think San Francisco to Temecula is really far.
Yes, yeah, it's about probably like a 9 hour drive.
So, do you feel like you have a sense of what you want your life to look like after debt payoff? And you know, it seems like obviously you talked about how you leaned into making so many simultaneous life changes at once, you know, leaving a relationship, moving really far away, going back with your parents, et cetera, stopping spending, which I'm sure to your point is like, I think for a lot of people, it's a lot easier to just make a lot of clean breaks than attempt to find a balance while you're still keeping a lot of other aspects of your lifestyle. I mean, it's not a perfect comparison, but I know for a lot of people, for example, who are in addiction recovery, changing a lot of aspects of their surroundings and their personal relationships makes the changes of recovery easier, because there's just fewer triggers, temptations, et cetera. But, you know, for me anyway, when I think about getting back to better financial habits, it can often be a slippery slope of reintroducing certain parts of your old lifestyle that were very tied up with bad financial habits. With, you know, not keeping yourself in a kind of financial purgatory forever. So for you, when you think about what you want your life to look like, after paying off your debt, kind of what are the priorities and how are you sort of planning to get back into a more balanced lifestyle without putting yourself in the same situation that led to debt in the first place?
Totally. Yeah, I very much am gonna be a big budgeter as far as like making sure the expenses that I'm spending money on are expenses that I'm using. I mean, when I first moved home, something I did is just like a little bank account audit of all the subscriptions I ha still had and whatnot. So just making sure I'm being a lot more intentional about the reoccurring expenses, and then on top of that, making sure I'm allocating a like good amount of money to high yield savings, fun, whatnot, so that I have a little bit of like guardrails for myself. I mean, I would be lying if I said that I wasn't nervous about like re-entering a like I'm planning on moving to LA after, very expensive city, really high rent. So I think there's definitely going to be trial and error. I don't feel nervous about getting back into credit card debt, mainly because I am trying to really lean into this like trust in myself of like, okay, I'm not gonna sit and like identify myself as this girl who gets into a ton of credit card debt, whatever. I'm gonna try to like shift the conversation of like, no, like I am the girl who like got out of a lot of credit card debt and now like understands spending and understands habits there. So I feel like, I mean, my whole relationship with spending money has just completely changed. So I feel nervous, but I think it'll all pan out.
If there's one thing that we've learned over the past 12 months here at TFD is that sales of really any kind, but especially B2B sales, can be incredibly difficult. Especially in this current environment where you're never really sure if we're in a pandemic or not, or in a recession or not, or generally what's going on. So it's particularly fitting that today's sponsor for this episode is LinkedIn. Let's talk about LinkedIn Sales Navigator for a minute. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage customers, ultimately increasing sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right customers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. From search filters to list management, analytical capabilities, and accurate, up-to-date profiles, Sales Navigator can save you time and make your job more efficient. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/TFD. That is linkedin.com/TFD for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/TFD and get started. Was there a big hesitation specifically to move back with your parents? Is that something that looking back, you probably should have done sooner, but you were hesitant to do it? And if so, why?
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of hesitation, but I think like the breaking point was more so my breakup versus the credit card debt, which I'm like, all everything happens for a reason. I'm so thankful that that happened because that pushed me to make the decision to move in with my parents since me and my partner were living together. And I would have never even considered living with my parents like in the years prior, because I had that shame that a lot of people talk about of like, oh my God, like I can never do that. Like, why would I do that? I want to like live beyond my means. I want to like live in my like one bedroom apartment or whatever. So I definitely wish I would have like just thought more through a lot of decisions. But as far as like moving back into my parents, it was a really huge relief once I like got out of the relationship, moved back into my parents for the first month or two. I was like, hell yeah, this is amazing. Like, this is great. Then it hit about like November, December. And I was like, I'm here. Like, I literally am just like here right now. And I felt that like strip of identity of like, I don't have my thing. Like, my things are in a storage unit. I don't have my friends here. But the first month or two, I was like, this is great.
Well, the identity thing I think is really interesting, because I feel like for me, for example, like I love my parents. I love my in-laws, but there's something I always don't love about staying with them, in the sense that like, I like to, my ideal situation is having my own place right nearby, because I personally, for me, my whole life, I don't know, maybe this is oldest child stuff. Independence and a feeling of self-sufficiency in adulthood is really, really central to my personal identity. I really hate the feeling of being a kid again, or being in the role of child. And like, even, you know, when I'm staying at, you know, a parent's or an in-law's, like you're sort of on their schedule and you are under their expectations. And at least for me anyway, it's difficult not to feel like a kid when you're in, I mean, your role in that family dynamic is you are the kid, you know? And I think in addition, you know, for me, it's a sort of separate issue, but like, I'm child-free by choice. So I will always kind of have that dynamic of like, I'm not going to be the person that everyone comes to, you know, whereas often parents sort of, it clicks into being them who become the sort of center of things. And so for me, I think that particular dynamic of feeling like a kid again, of feeling like that loss of independence and agency, would be really difficult, especially when you're trying to make so many really grown-up decisions and doing things that are really sort of parenting yourself in a lot of ways. I would be really interested to hear how you navigate, you know, embracing the good that comes from living with your parents while not allowing that to make you feel like a kid.
Yeah, definitely trial and error. I very, very much resonate with that. I'll have days where it's like when I was living alone and I was like feeling bratty or just like not in a good mood, it didn't matter. I was just like living alone and I could be a brat, like in my apartment, it didn't matter. But like here, it's like if I'm in a bad mood or like I like am feeling bratty or whatnot, I feel like I'm like, oh my God, I am 12 again. Like I'm literally like, I'm snappy, I'm reacting to stuff. And it's like, okay, I can both be like really, really thankful and grateful for being here and also be annoyed. Like I'm like also like allowed to have these moments of like just humanness where I'm like, oh my God, like I have been very extremely hyper independent for the past 10 years. That also was something I very much like had a lot of pride in. And I like was never the person that wanted to ask for help or whatnot, which in a lot of ways that did also contribute to my credit card debt. So there was like a lot of moments with myself where I was like, okay, like I need to not be like embarrassed about this. And now like as an adult who's thinking about moving out, I am having like a lot of like shame thoughts of like, oh, everyone thinks I'm lame that I'm like living with my parents and now I'm like moving out and everyone thinks this and this and this. And it's like, no one's thinking about you that much. Like, it's okay. So I will like audio message one of my best friends like all the time, and I like talk through this, and she was like, I promise you, when you tell people that like you lived with your parents, it's gonna be something that they're like, oh, okay. And then the next thing, like, it's not gonna be this like, oh my God, you're like a 13-year-old little girl. It's just, which is how it feels in my brain sometimes. So totally agree. I'm like very much like a separate space type of person. And I think like my advice always for people, if they're like considering moving back home with their parents or anything, is like find something that is just like your thing. Like my morning walks are like my time. And I'm like, this is my time that I get to like go on a walk and like be myself and 100% just like feel that like solitude and like pride in what I'm doing. And I also go to like yoga bar classes. And that is like another thing where I'm like separating the two things of like, okay, this is my thing that I'm excited about versus like, I'm just like sitting on my parents' couch watching TV feeling sad.
I totally hear the like needing your own things thing. Like I don't, I mean, for me again, I, and this is no disrespect. Like I love my parents. They're not listening to this, I'm sure. I have way too much content for them to listen to everything, but mom, dad, you know, I love you. But like, there's not really a concept in my family, in my extended family, to be perfectly honest, of like parallel play where like you can be in the same room, but not interacting. Like if I'm in the same room, we're talking, we're getting questions, we're making small talk, we're making plans, we're discussing, you know, like there's just a constant, like, there's just a constant expectation of interaction, which I think some people thrive in that environment. I do not, I wilt. But I also think there is something to be said for the fact that, you know, in many, many cultures, it is more the norm than the exception to be living intergenerationally. And a lot of people, you know, they have parents who come live with them, and that may be our case one day. But I do think that there is something particularly fraught about having it be financially imposed in that way, that it can't be an organic choice or something that, you know, both parties kind of come to. I wonder, you know, you mentioned that ending your relationship or the relationship ending was a really big turning point for a lot of these big life changes, especially financial. And I think it doesn't maybe get talked about all the time, the dynamics, the financial dynamics of relationships, of cohabitation, where although it is clearly less expensive and more financially advantageous to be in a couple rather than single, oftentimes relationships can aggravate or cover or distract from financial problems because you're not going it alone. It's not just your financial status against the world. So can you talk a little bit about the role specifically that being part of a couple played in you getting into all of that debt and staying in it for a while?
Yeah, I mean, I think like for me, being in a relationship like never saved me money. Like I'm such a big like I'm gonna treat you and like buy these things and do this thing and whatever, like to a fault where I'm like I literally need to get a grip. And so I think like I was able to kind of just push off the debt and not really think about it because to me, I was like, well, I'm in a relationship and that's a good thing. I always like had the mentality of like, which like now I'm not even like really like dating at all, like living at home, but this mentality of like being in a relationship is like the main goal. So in my brain, I was like, I had filled this spot in my life, like I'm in a relationship, that's great. So I'm not really focusing on these like other anxieties that are in my life. And I feel like I think a lot of people find themselves in this position too, where they're in a relationship that's not good for them. Like it doesn't feel good. And they're not able to get out because of finances. And I think like that was also something that was really stressful for me because I was like, okay, we had just signed a lease. I was like, I don't know what the process is going to be like breaking this lease. I've never done that before. I can't afford to go get another apartment. Like, and yeah, thankfully I had my parents to go back to, but a lot of people don't. So it's like, okay, what do? Like call a friend and like hope that they're able to like give you some space for a second. Like, I feel like the finance stress of that is just like a whole other thing in its own regard, but yeah.
Well, to that point, you know, I have a friend going through a separation right now that is really very upsetting and traumatic for a lot of reasons. But one of the things that I think is like underrated in discussing separation of any kind in a relationship is the enormous downgrade that your lifestyle takes as a result, because you can just, you know, as I said, there's just so much more financial advantage to paying for things and living in things as a twosome. And I honestly think, I mean, it's the stats show it, right? Like that keeps a lot of people in a lot of relationships. You know, whether it's a question of you literally couldn't afford to separate or a question of maybe it's not worth the lifestyle downgrade and it's okay to just kind of keep the status quo. I imagine that the act of leaving a relationship and moving back with your parents at the same time, the downgrade must have felt much more acute because of those two things at once. Like, I'm sure there's like I never cohabitated with someone before my husband, but I would imagine there can maybe be like a chicness about like, if you're moving into your own like single girly pop apartment and you have like your boxes and your pizza and whatever. But moving back in with your parents is like it's a very specific direction to move in. And I feel like for me, and this is maybe like a not super, what's the word I'm looking for, like mature thing. But I feel like for me, I would probably have a moment of like, did I lose the breakup? Do you know what I'm saying? Like I'm not leaving this relationship to go to my best life. Yeah. So can you just talk about navigating that feeling specifically?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, for me, honestly, the relationship was so bad that like, it felt really good to like move home with my parents. I was like, oh my God. I like had no idea like how, I mean, I knew how bad I felt in the relationship, but I think like, I mean, everyone wants to have their like hot girl summer after a breakup, like of course, but I think like for me, I was like, oh my God, okay. I was like, finally, like my brain feels so smooth right now. Like I'm moving back into my parents. Like I just get to like relax for a second. That's why I say like the first couple of months were like blissful. I was like, oh my God, I'm getting cooked for me. Like I'm literally like sleeping in like a comfy bed, like whatever. I think like now I like, and it's funny because I actually never, like shockingly from an outsider looking in, you're like, oh my God, yeah, that feels like you like lost the breakup. For like from my perspective, knowing like all the intricacies, I'm like, I totally won the breakup. Which like it's not always about that, like of course, but I think like for so many different reasons I was like, okay, like I am like setting myself up for like something really good this like next year, and I'm like so excited for like summer of 2020 for me to be able to like be debt free, like start dating again, and like have had this like break from almost everything for a second. I always like try to phrase this as my like wellness retreat era of like just like at my parents, like eating good and like relaxing and sleeping, and then like we'll move back into the chaos of it all next year. But yeah, it's been really interesting. So there's, you know, breakups are all their own little beast, but yeah, it was nice, honestly, to be able to just like literally leave the city. I was like, I gotta go.
But when you look at the sort of logistics of the debt repayment, did you, like, what were the steps you took? Like, were we doing balance transfer credit cards? Were we, you know, are we doing like the snowball versus the avalanche method? Like, how did you actually map out the most intelligent way to pay off your debt?
Yeah, so early 2023, I did a balance transfer and it kind of shot me in the foot, which I feel like a lot of people don't talk about because I was not in the mental space to start actively paying down my debt. So it was just additional credit line, essentially, which I think like now looking back, I'm like, it's absolutely like an incredible tool for people to use as long as like you really understand what you're doing and you are ready to really actively pay down that debt. But you got to make sure you're like mentally there. And then, so when I moved back into my parents, I was looking at my cards. I had three cards, my zero interest one for my balance transfer, my Chase travel card, that was my really high one. So that one was at, I think, 24,000 when I had moved back. And then my Wells Fargo one that I had originally had. And I kind of did both this snowball and the avalanche. So I started with my smallest one because it was like 3,000, paid that one off because I was like, I want like a little bit of relief in that sense. And then moved to my Chase one, which I'm still just like chipping away at. And it's been such a relief. So I think like what I always try to tell everyone is like, find whatever formula like works for your brain. Like, I think like there are absolutely tools you can utilize if you want to do a personal loan, if you want to do a balance transfer. Definitely talk to someone about it, talk through that, and then figure out what makes sense. Everyone has like a different thing that's going to like make sense for their brain as far as payoff.
I totally agree. And I think also one of the most underrated aspects of the debt payment journey is to just make it more manageable, even from like a battlefront perspective. Like getting rid of one card has so many benefits, but I think like the number one thing for me is just like one less like tab to have open in terms of like things I have to check. But I also think, I mean, when you look at, you know, the time where you felt most underwater, which I assume must have been maybe 6 to 12 months before you actually started paying off your debt. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you look at the time when you were most like underwater, do you feel like there's something that someone could have said to you or advice that someone could have offered at that time that really would have helped that you maybe didn't get?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, because I think in one part of it, it's like, you need to be the one that's like ready to make the change. So it was like such a mental thing for me personally. But I think like people could have been a lot more honest about like, I shouldn't have moved in with my partner. Like that was a really like financial mistake for me. Like I shouldn't have done that. There was like definitely things where I feel like I wish people were honest about, like they would make little side comments if I bought a really expensive Airbnb or whatever. But if people had been really, really honest with me, I may have came to a little bit more. But I think a lot of times with like bad decisions or good decisions or whatnot, like you need that like affirmation from someone else that like, hey, what are you doing? Do you actually want to do this? And that's how I feel with like moving in with my partner. Like had someone been like, is this something that you actually like really want to do? I probably would have been like, oh my God, no, like not really. But I felt like pressured to do that. So from myself and my partner from different angles. So I think like, yes and no, I had already taken in advice from like a lot of other people from like, had been consuming credit card content as well, like on like TikTok and whatnot. And yeah, I think it was really the like rock bottom of like the end of the relationship that like mentally is what I needed to really like make the shift.
And kind of going back to the actual sort of consumer decision. So you mentioned obviously a $4,000 couch. Go off. Tell us about the couch.
I'm like, this couch is the bane of my existence. So I like bought this modular couch, which I have like talked about. It's like the infamous couch on my TikTok. But I bought this couch. It was a small sectional with three parts. Modular couch where you can add on to it in the future. And I was like, perfect. I'm going to buy this couch. I can add on to it when I get into a bigger apartment. That's amazing. About 6 months into having the couch, I was like browsing the website, noticed that they had discontinued the color. I call up customer service immediately and I'm like, hey, I just bought this modular couch. Where's the color? Like, I would like love to be able to, make it bigger because that is like the literal reason that I bought the couch. And they're like, yeah, I'm so sorry. Like we discontinued it. But you can buy the additional piece now if you want to buy it to make sure you have it. Cause we have like some more cloth left in the storage, whatever. And I was like, oh my God. And so the couch was what I had bought at that point was I think like $3,000, and then the additional piece was another like 1,000 to 1,500, which didn't even fit in my apartment, so I had to like keep it in a different room. So I then ended up spending about 4,000 because I was like, oh my God, like I have already spent so much on this couch. I don't want to like miss out on the opportunity to be able to like have it be bigger, which like now at this point I'm like, I mean, first of all, I shouldn't have bought that couch in the first place. Like that was a not a smart purchase on my end. I'm like, I should have browsed Facebook Marketplace for a couple more hours. And then second of all, like I didn't need to extend the couch. Like I could have either sold it or like bought a bigger couch when I originally like, or when I moved into a bigger place. So it just like that type of marketing just like really gets you. Just like one of the like trendy couch websites. I was like, you guys.
What brand couch was this?
Joybird.
Oh, I don't even know that. Wow. Yeah. And I know couches. Okay. So you had the couch, the famous couch that appears to be a tenant of the Britney lore. But then you mentioned that a huge amount of your debt is on your Chase travel card and was specifically travel related. Which I feel like, and I've discussed this before on the channel, but I'll never miss an opportunity to reiterate it. I feel like the worst thing for a lot of people's mental health was that study that was like, spending on experiences makes you more happy than spending on things. Because I think what a lot of people took from that was like, well, any money I spend on experiences is automatically worth it and good for, it's an investment in my mental health and all of that kind of stuff. And also I just think kind of generally the especially young people now have a unique and in a lot of ways pretty unhealthy relationship to expectations of travel. You know, obviously only 30% of Americans even have a passport. So there are a huge amount of people who can't even afford to travel, period. But then amongst people who can, you know, there's I think because of what we're often exposed to, I think the expectations of travel in terms of destination, in terms of accommodation, in terms of all of that has really inflated hugely beyond what, I mean, even when I was traveling in my early 20s, that was sort of pre or just the dawn of Instagram. And I think even that in and of itself radically changed people's perceptions of what travel was supposed to be like and how much you were supposed to be able to do it. I would love to hear how that relationship to travel kind of figured into your spending, and kind of more importantly, how you plan to navigate travel going forward in a way that's both kind of joyful, but also not irresponsible financially.
Totally. Yeah. Oh my God. The first solo trip that I ever took was a trip to New York, and I like took it. And that was the rise. I mean, that was the downfall of everything. 'Cause I took a solo trip and I was like, that was amazing. Like, I love solo travel. It's so fun. I love being able to like, just like create, like, again, like we've talked about, have my own space, whatnot. And I got an Airbnb for that trip. I think I spent like $1,000 on Airbnb for that trip, which like, again, I could have planned for that trip and I could have spent $1,000 on accommodations. It wouldn't have been the end of the world, but I put it on my credit card. And then after that, like I mentioned, I really was just like, hated being in the Bay Area, wanted to like move to LA really bad. So a lot of my, like, I would buy, I think the most expensive Airbnb I got in LA was like $2,300 or something. I got an Airbnb for like a week and a half. 'Cause I was like, I just want to like be here. Like, I just want to like hang out and like get this like really fancy Airbnb in Elysian Heights in Silver Lake, like whatever. Because I was addicted to this idea of like, yeah, an experience and like luxury and like being able to like, I guess like cosplay as rich, like essentially, because you're like, okay, I'm staying in this fancy house that I could never afford. And I feel like I hated, like, I don't know. I am such, and I still am really like this. So it definitely will be something I'll like process a lot through like my future travels, but I'm very much like I want the most comfortable accommodation. I want the most convenient location. I want like all the things that I like, I want to be able to get all the things. Otherwise, like, I'm going to be stressed out, which for what? But so I feel like now going forward, I'm very much just trying to accommodate, like save for travel. If I want to spend a lot, and stay with friends. Like, I don't need to go get an Airbnb. Like, I am planning on visiting New York in the next like month or two. And my best friend lives there, and I'm like, I'm going to stay on an air mattress at her place because, like, first of all, I'm very excited to be able to like go and just hang out and drink wine and be in the same apartment. But yeah, being able to have moments where you're like, I don't need the 5-star resort for lack of, or like for the 5-star Airbnb, like for this trip, I can do something comfortable, and that's going to be great. And I'm so excited for that trip.
Out of curiosity, you've mentioned a few times how desperate you were to get out of the Bay Area. What was so bad about the Bay Area for you?
I don't know. And it's not even like any like Bay Area slander really at all. I just like didn't feel like I felt really stressed out there. And I think like I didn't like the weather. A lot of my friends had moved out of the Bay Area, so I kind of felt really isolated. So I didn't really have like, when I first moved there, I absolutely loved it. I loved it the first couple of years, when I was like living with roommates and whatnot. Best friends all started to move away, and I was like, oh, I was like, I don't know that I love this so much anymore. But yeah, I think just like a lot of different reasons, but yeah, no, I'm like, the Bay Area is cool and it's fun to visit. I just, living there was really hard.
Listen, I couldn't with that weather. A super rainy. Who gave that quote? There was a quote I read once that was like, the hardest winter of my life was one summer in San Francisco.
Yeah, and like thankfully Oakland, because I was in Oakland and it was a little bit warmer there, but I grew up in, it's Temecula is like the desert, so it's warm like all the time. It's basically like Arizona essentially. So I was not used to the like cloudy weather, and it just put me in such a bad mood all the time, and I was like such a baby about it. But I just, again, like those things, I feel like it's really easy to minimize those things and be like, oh, I should have like loved it and whatever, and made the most of it, and I did, like in a lot of ways. But it's also okay to not like a city and not want to live there. Like, it's also okay to want to move. So yeah,
totally, totally fair. Well, thank you so, so much for taking the time to chat. As I mentioned, I'm a huge fan personally of the content you create about your debt repayment. Also, I love that your followers, like when you do like a brand partnership, they're all like, yes, Brittany.
That's so funny. Yeah. I was like so nervous to start doing brand partnerships. And the first video, I was like cracking up all of the comments. I was like, oh my God, you guys. I'm like, I love it. So I'm obsessed.
The Beehive, they're here. So thank you so much for joining us. And if people want to go and follow your debt repayment journey, where can they go?
Yeah, I am on TikTok. I literally always make fun of myself because I can never remember my username. I think it's just BRIT period Reynolds. But if you look up Brittany Debt, you'll find me on TikTok.
And it will be, of course, linked in the description and the show notes. So thank you again so much for joining us, Brittany. And thank you all at home for tuning in. And we will see you back here next week on an all new episode of the Financial Confessions. Yeah. Bye, guys.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week for an all-new episode of The Financial Confessions. The Financial Confessions is created by The Financial Diet and hosted by me, Chelsea Fagan. It is produced by Alexa Brooks Major and Holly Trantham. Recording and editing by Emily Fisher, and music and sound effects are from Epidemic Sound. Want more of our content? Head over to our YouTube page, The Financial Diet, to see our monthly deep dives, videos of this show, and our entire backlog of videos and podcasts. I'll talk to you next week.